This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Howdy, hour number two. What's going on? Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. Coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience on this Monday. Across the country, as I said, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. Sirius XM 206. Look at this guy. Look who we drain. He's in studio this time, usually on the horn, although he's been in here
love
a few
it.
Times.
So. I always love coming in with you guys.
Jeremy Roenick.
You guys are the bomb.
Why? Because we're
here.
Bald and your locks of hair make you look much younger than your age.
Listen, I got to make you jealous a little bit.
You do, know, man.
Look
at him. It's ridiculous.
Roenick. And it grows fast, too.
Does it really?
Yeah, it grows real fast. Yeah,
Jesus.
I can get the mullet pretty quick. You know, yeah. lose a couple pounds, I'll get right back on there.
You're a hockey player, but please don't do that.
I asked him, by the way. We got to take this to the air too, because we were just BSing, kind of shooting the breeze before the segment. I said, how many fights did you have during your career? And you said about 40.
About 40.
And I said, how many did you win? And you said,
probably about 15.
And I said, that's all? But tell me why.
Because I fought all the tough guys.
Such
I went
as?
After the biggest guys. I fought
Probert.
Bob Probert twice. It wasn't my choice. He came after me, so I had to protect myself. Martin McSorley twice, Berube once. Mm. There's a guy named Mark Bell who played for about 8 years. He was 6'5", 6'4", 230 pounds. I fought a guy named Scott Walker, who was a really, really tough guy. Not very big in stature, but he was like a Ty Domi. I would never fight Ty Domi.
He's crazy.
Because he had like an iron head. Yeah. Right? It looked iron and it felt iron. And when you punched him in the face, he got excited and his eyes lit up and a smile came on his face and he started to drool and
yeah,
he just
those are the
loved
guys you
that
worry
stuff.
About.
Those are the guys that you worry about.
Who'd you beat?
Good question.
I did a few guys, but I only remember the ones that I lost because I got so mad that I lost. But I loved that I stuck up for myself. You know, when you fight the big guys, that makes you feel a bit better. When you're fighting the other guys and you beat them, it's no big deal.
You're supposed
to
win. You don't feel good about those.
Well, you know, it's funny too because you know I'm sure it's a lot different now. But back in the day, if you turtled up when somebody was coming after you, I mean, you must have. What was it like in the locker room? When your guys knew that you turtled out of
a fight.
There were
fights in the locker room. We had fights in the locker room.
Let's hear it. Wow.
I mean, when I started, number one, I wasn't a big hitter. And Mike Keenan turned me into a big hitter. So I was one of those guys that would run around and I would throw huge body checks on guys. I mean, I would knock guys out. I'd put guys into the benches, you know. All this crazy stuff.
Was it clean or was it dirty? I know it was aggressive. Were you clean or dirty early?
Then it was clean.
No, I'm saying,
I'd get suspended every week if I played the way now.
Oh, you can't play that way now.
So
that league's over.
But back then, that's how you could play that way. I could jump off my feet. I could target the head. I could take 3, 4, 5 steps and, you know, throw all my 165 pounds into them.
Mm-hmm.
But when you run around like that as a kid back then in the late 80s, early 90s, they were coming after you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were going to play that way, you had to pay the piper, baby. You know, you have to stick up for yourself. And, you know, when someone wants to fight you, you fight, you get beat up, you get right back in there. It's the guys that turtled. It's the guys that ran around like today. The guys that run around, all they do is hit, instigate.
It's like a little bird pecking for a worm.
Then you go fight them, and they skate away.
Yeah, nobody wants to see that.
You couldn't do that back then. And not only that, back, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, there was no instigator. So if you did that, it's not like you're fighting once.
Yeah.
You're fighting once, twice, three, four times because guys would take turns coming at you.
Gotcha. Oh,
so
that makes sense.
There was a lot of you had to be accountable for the way that you played.
Well, you talk about accountability. You talk about good, I guess, the respect. There was always respect in hockey.
Sure.
There wasn't any showboating because you know that, you know, it's going to happen next. You're going to be
they looked each other right in the eye.
And
so
you're getting a fist to the jaw. You got to opine on this Carolina Hurricane situation where Don Cherry's calling them a bunch of jerks. You don't see celebrating in hockey because you'll get your butt kicked, right?
Well, is this not bad?
Not choreographed celebration.
Not during the game.
Yeah. I'm talking about this kind of hockey. Okay. This kind of
celebration. Let everybody know what's going on, because for those who don't know, Carolina, when they win, they actually encourage their fans to stay in the arena. They have, like, they feint like a home run, like the bowling pins.
They
the limbo.
They do all
like the touchdown celebrations. And the fans love it, but I think a lot of people don't, like Don Cherry. So there you go.
Okay, well, let me preface this. I love Don Cherry. He's one of our greatest ambassadors as a hockey personality, and he does great critique. But he was in the 60s and the 70s. He coached when he coached. This was what they create as a league, maybe $200,000 of revenue.
Yeah. The Blades weren't even curved.
There was
back
no
then.
Social media. There was no hype. There was no nothing. You know, they barely made any money. It was a respect kind of game where. Now it's big business, okay? Now you have people paying $150, $175 for a ticket. They're bringing family of four.
Yeah.
They're going out for dinner. They're coming to watch a game that they want to be entertained, okay? This is an entertainment where it's a $4 billion enterprise right now, the National Hockey League. If a team wants to go out and find a way to sell tickets, to get people excited, to let people into their celebration, I think they're celebrating as a city. What we all want to celebrate is wins.
And it's at home.
Huh. It's at home.
They don't do it on the road.
The team's gone that they beat. And they don't care if they, what they feel like. They lost the game. They're in there getting ready to leave town. Now what they're doing is they're making their fans excited about an opportunity to celebrate together.
Yeah.
And they're in their locker room figuring out what's the next thing we're going to do. There's nothing wrong with showing some excitement and pizzazz and some personality in a sport that most of the time you get... We did it 100%.
Yes. Or you have this position.
Good answer, JR.
Because I would have had to beat you up if you had a different position.
This is an entertainment.
You might have won.
I will tell you this. I bet you that there are more people in the stands because they're liking the team and their charisma and their personality, and they're a better team to watch, but then they stay in their seats longer because they want to see what they're going to do.
Yeah, which means another beer sale or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
And the Carolina Hurricanes are taking
business.
Advantage of that. They're selling t-shirts.
It's a business and it's an entertainment.
I saw the t-shirts they have out there. Okay, so Jeremy Roenick is with us in studio. Should be a Hall of Famer. We say this all the time.
Thank you, guys.
It's absolutely ridiculous that you're not. We always have you back with this. You know that. And Jeremy, of course, doing a great job. He's honest and... He knows the game inside now, but as you can tell, he's evolving with the times. That's why I was kidding around. I'm like, thank God you take that position, because the last thing the sport of hockey, kind of like the sport of golf, needs is to have somebody away from 50. Exactly, even though you don't look it, but you're an old head. You're an old school hockey player.
No,
you know, you came up in the 80s. And if you were to come on our show and chastise Carolina and call them out, I think it would be very petty. I like that you get the big picture, but specific to Don Cherry, who I also like, Kettle Black. He's up there making it all about himself with those wacky zoot suits, and now he's going to say that the Carolina Hurricanes are, come on, be consistent,
Don. I don't know if
deep
down inside he really likes it, but he wants to make a statement and keep his reputation
relevant
to a certain.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Let me ask you about this. Lou Lamoriello is, and he has been for basically 30 years, not good. Great at what
amazing.
He does. He is amazing. Now he's with the Islanders. They lose their best player, Tavares. We all saw the picture over the summer with him with the Maple Leaf sheets, which was great. He went back to Toronto. Might score 50 goals. You and I were talking about this before the show. He's played great for them. Can you explain to me specifically what Lou Lamoriello does that makes him special? Can you like make it tangible? Because I know he's great, but I want to know why.
I'm going to take it back. Further, when I was 7 years old, I used to go to hockey school in Providence College. When he
the Friars, nice.
When he was the head of the Athletics Association and one of the biggest hockey guys in Providence, they were winning NCAA championships back
then. The Beanpot Classic
they were winning national championships. So then he goes to New Jersey, right? And I heard rumors that he lived in a hotel. They actually got two hotel rooms. They broke down the wall. He lived in a hotel room right out in the Meadowlands, and he literally lived at the arena. So Lou Lamoriello, and what do? They win championships in the 90s.
Yeah.
So then he goes to Toronto. What does he do? Toronto hasn't made the playoffs in 9 years. Lou Lamoriello goes, changes the team around. Now they're one of the best teams in the National Hockey League. Now he goes to the Islanders, right? And probably the surprise team of the National Hockey League.
Oh, definitely
so
surprise
what
team.
Does Lou Lamoriello do? He's married to the game. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, Lou Lamoriello is in the mix. He is in the trenches.
But Jeremy, there's got to be a lot of people who are married to their job, specific to sports.
Not like Lou Lamoriello. It is a different level. It's a different level. There's only one guy that I would think that might be close to them, and that's Ken Hitchcock, or the coach of the Edmonton Oilers. He's not getting he's not getting the results right now that he wants. But Lou Lamoriello, literally, it's a different level with Lou. You got to know Lou and understand his life to understand how deep he really goes into it.
Uh-huh.
And he's just a brainchild, and he hires the right people. He has the right mentality. He is a no-joke person. You don't mess around with Lou. So when you play for Lou, you know you have to give 100%. So I love seeing him be successful.
JR,
I love the man. I really love him.
JR, the last time we had you on, maybe it was the first time we had you on, we were talking about these non-traditional hockey
markets, right?
The markets. Phoenix and the Coyotes is one.
Carolina.
A lot of guys live out there, which is making – you know, Arizona hockey.
Yep.
I remember you told us who was going to be the first overall pick.
That's right.
I forget what year it was.
He nailed it.
And he nailed it.
Two or three years ago.
Tampa Bay is another one.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't feel like a hockey bastion, but it has been. I remember my brother going to Lightning games down there. They have 92 points. I think the next closest team is 77.
15 points. Yeah.
It's why are they so good?
Well, number one, they had great leadership, and they had C.V. Eisenman was running the team for a long time. Obviously, a brilliant guy. Yeah.
Stevie.
A brilliant guy. They brought on Mr. Vinnick, who is the owner. And what he did is he influxed a ton of money into the city, both with the hockey programs, building arenas, making sure that the kids had had access to not only the games, but playing floor hockey, street hockey, rebuilt part of the city. And then he put a team on the ice and really gave the team to the city.
Yeah.
Right? So... when you have a winner, number one, and then you have a team that shows how much they care about the community, where you take the kids into the schools, you know, the players into the schools, they're with the kids, they do promotional stuff, they give tickets away, they help the veterans. They do nothing but make that city better.
Yeah.
And the city responds by coming to the games.
And it shows, and it falls right in line with this program that you've been part of for a long time. You're the spokesperson. You're traveling around doing media tours.
Yeah.
Hockey, Kraft Hockeyville USA 2019. This is an amazing endeavor.
It really is.
A lot of these local hockey arenas that get broken down. They need repairs. And this is a way for the community to get involved.
Right.
Via social media and others, but, particularly Hockeyville, crafthockeyville.com, you can enter. Tell us a little bit about this.
I know you've been doing this every year. I appreciate you bringing it up. It's, you know, you talk about, you know, you played football.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you wanted to get a football game, you get the kids together, you go out in the backyard, you get your friends together, you go out in the backyard, play football. You want a basketball game, get your buddies together, go play in the court. Baseball, same thing. For hockey, it's not that easy. You can't just go out in your backyard and play a game of ice.
No.
You play street hockey and all. But, you know, there's only like 2,300 arenas in the country. And for all the thousands of kids that want to play, what Kraft does is they're celebrating hockey. They're putting hockey in the forefront and trying to expose it to as many kids as they can. And they want to give the kids the best environment that they can. So they're celebrating the small towns, you know, the little Bodunk towns, the small town America that has these kids that dream of being National Hockey League players, that have a little, you know, rundown arena that they play in, that they love, that the community loves. You know, when you take a kid to play hockey or any sport, you teach them to be competitive, teach them to be a team player, teach them how to win and lose gracefully.
Problem solving, man.
And you teach them to be healthy, right?
Hopefully you teach them to win more than 15 out of 40 fights.
Yeah, right. So these communities, they become like people's churches. They send their kids to learn this stuff. And every Saturday, everybody, you know, they gather there. The kids play hockey. The parents do all their things.
Yep.
And these arenas get broken down. So what Kraft does is they come out and they say, we're going to find the most passionate hockey community in America. And they have this competition where you can go on crafthockeyville.com, nominate your local arena, and tell us a story why your community is the most passionate. And then your community can rally around. You can get on social media. You can send pictures. You can have conversations on crafthockeyville.com, on Twitter, on Facebook, all the different areas. But what it does is it builds a community and it builds friendships, and it allows you guys to have a different kind of close-knit community that has rallied around to win something national. Right?
It's civic pride.
Yeah, and
phenomenal.
then what happens, they get $150,000 to put into that arena, right, to make that arena better for the kids. Then what they do is they bring the NHL and Kraft brings the National Hockey League to do an NHL preseason game right there in that arena that your kid's playing.
It's a great endeavor,
that's
Jeremy.
That's aired on NBC. And to see the kids' eyes when National Hockey League players come into, you know, these little towns, sign autographs, take pictures, and then skate on the ice, you know, right in front of these kids, it creates dreams, and it's amazing.
It's the awesome. Best. Jeremy so, Roenick.
Yeah, I will say they have up till March 2nd to go on crafthockeyville.com and nominate your arena. It is a great. This is the fifth year, and it's getting better year by year.
We'll tweet this out for you. Not a ton of time left. Jeremy Roenick, NHL on NBC, of course, former great center. Should be in the Hall of Fame. Ton of All-Star games. Let's talk about young hockey players. Do you think it's easier to identify a really like 4 or 5 years old or whatever the age is where you can start to discern talent for hockey? Somebody who's going to be a great skater or somebody who's going to have a great stick work with the puck? What's easier to spot?
You can see the mind. You can't really see that. You can't really see the skating or the ability.
Yeah.
Because the kids that are younger are much more frail. They don't get their stride or their technique until they're 10, 11, 12 years old. Unusual, on par. But what you'll see is their characteristics, where they go, where they pass the puck, where their tendency to drift, whether they know where their other players are, if they do pass the puck, and if they pass the puck to the right person.
Yeah.
That's the hockey IQ that's built into kids in the way that they view things, how the way they observe things.
Wow, I would never thought of that.
That's pretty, you're born with that, right?
And by the way, those are things that are instinct that you can't teach. So if they have that, you can always learn to skate. Mm-hmm. You can always learn to stick handle.
But you can't learn to be fast.
You can't learn. It's technique to be fast. Some people will never get the technique. Mm-hmm. It's definitely teaching will help you a lot. There's no question. But a lot of people if you can't skate, the puck doesn't matter anyway.
That's true.
You can't get there.
It's not going to find you, and you're not going to find anybody if you have it on your blade.
Exactly. So a lot of the young teaching right now, especially in USA Hockey, they teach the kids the fundamentals, how to skate right, how to hold the position right, how to use your edges to make sure that you can turn, cut, stop.
Leverage.
The mind, the brain is instilled in there, and repetition builds that. But it's the special players that you watch that you know they have it at a very early age.
All right, settle this real fast. Wayne Gretzky, undeniably greatest hockey player of all time. Mm-hmm. Gordie Howe or Bobby Orr, number two, or somebody else?
I'd go Bobby Orr only because he revolutionized the way that defense was played. I mean, he's probably the only player that I can think of, maybe Gordie Howe too, the way he played, that could play in today's game the way he played back then.
Okay.
And I don't think there's many players that you can say that.
I got you. And this is embarrassing. I finally saw a young blood. I stumbled up.
That's Patrick Schrazy.
He didn't see it yet, so get on him.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not a hockey dude. I mean,
I stumbled on it.
So
there's a black guy from Virginia. I mean,
Kevin Weeks is on the NHL Network. He's a black guy doing hockey.
I played with a guy named Steve Thomas in Chicago. So Steve Thomas was in Youngblood at the time. He's one of the extras. So they had a bunch of NHL extras that were actually on the team around watching.
What a movie.
So it's hysterical. I
got to check it out.
Rob Lowe and Patrick Swayze were epic in that movie.
And it's so funny what we thought, you know, what represented an attractive female in the 80s. Like, you see her now, you're like, okay, but I'm sure in the 80s she was smoking.
She was smoking. Absolutely. I had a crush on her throughout the 80s. You kidding me?
Gotcha.
And if I had to go up against Racky, man,
I
don't know if I would be able to survive, man.
Oh my God.
That guy was mean looking, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. And talking about dropping the gloves, he wasn't afraid.
Yeah, one of the most underappreciated hockey movies of all time.
That's awesome. All right, listen, we got to roll. Otherwise, we would do this a little bit longer. Again, should be in the Hall of Fame. We'll tweet the stuff out with Kraft.
Thank you guys.
It's a great
really
initiative. Good seeing you, JR.
Thanks,
buddy.
You guys are awesome.
No doubt, buddy. Jeremy Roenick, we're a little late. We got a timeout. We'll come back. Look at those stats. How is this man not? No, look at that hairdo, though. What was that? Were you running for president with that haircut? I mean, it's like part in the middle. It's like 1950s. What is that, Roenick?
Yeah, maybe I should.
You might be able to win.
Maybe you should. All right. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
This is Tiki and Tierney on CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 1-855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Great news, quick way to save money, switch to Geico. Just go to geico.com and in 15 minutes save 15% or more on car insurance. On this busy Monday, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Sirius XM 206, inbounds, out of bounds coming up. Next segment at 5 Eastern, we'll get to Antonio Brown, some more stuff. He just continues to go harder and harder at his former, and let's say it's going to be his former quarterback. And also the story that emerged over the weekend about Odell Beckham Jr. and just how close the Pats were to acquiring him and if there might be anything there that they could circle back to. Chris Mullen, third hour as well, head coach of St. John's, big win against Villanova. So we got a lot to hit. And let's at least circle back. We ran a little late with JR, which is fine. You know, I wasn't sure if he would embrace some of the antics, the post-game antics by the Carolina Hurricanes.
Really?
I wasn't sure.
No, he's
a modern school guy.
Yeah, but he's modern in his thinking. He's out at the Grammys telling stories. He's out there partying.
Yeah, he was
hanging out. I mean, he's older. Because he's not old. He's 50, almost 50. But he lives a great life. He's like a great ambassador for Kraft and for Hockeyville, USA, which the details Sam just putting up on our social media account. If you know small hockey arenas anywhere in the country, you should definitely get a part of that because as he described that, can you imagine NHL hockey players coming out to these small towns playing on your ice? I mean, it's just awesome.
It is.
But you know, Jeremy's very aware. It's what makes him such a great analyst on and why NBC is so lucky to have him because he sees things in like historical context because he is a student of the sport. He played it for a long time. It should be a Hall of Famer, as we always say when he comes on, but also evolved with it, right? And he sees the young players and you know, what they're all about and how they see the game differently. And, you know, it's just I agree with I think his perspective was exactly what I was expecting him to give.
Interesting.
Carolina
maybe I'm selling him short
issue.
There. Not to say that he's not progressive, but, you know, in terms of just trying to reshape the sport and evolve, not necessarily reshape, but evolve with the times there, which I guess would lead to sort of a reshaping. I wonder if this stuff would fly at the Garden. I don't know if this would fly in Boston. I'm not so sure if this might fly in Toronto. In Edmonton,
I don't think
Philadelphia Flyers, maybe not, but that's not the point.
Yeah.
If it works in a certain market, embrace it. You know, Carolina's been bad for a while. I was looking at the standings before. We talked a lot about the Islanders, but, you know, right now the Carolina Hurricanes have 68 points. They're in fifth place in the Metro, but they're only a couple of points behind the Islanders. Actually, they're a point behind the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Pittsburgh Penguins, so... You know, they get a little high. There's a look at the standings in the Metropolitan Division, but you look at where Carolina is right now. They've got 68. You know, you win two games in a row. All of a sudden, depending upon what the Capitals, the Jackets, and the Penguins do, you jump right behind the Islanders there.
Yeah.
I mean, so they're in a position to do. And I think it's great. I think it's fun. I was just not shocked, mildly surprised that he embraced it. Yeah. I think that's great for the sport.
I think it's good for the sport, especially for some of these. They're younger teams. They're not historic teams that have been around forever. Fan bases, not that they're not embracing it, but it's new to them, right? He asked why I haven't seen young bloods. BT, I grew up in Southwest Virginia.
I know,
but I'm just saying. Like,
dude, I didn't see it until 3 months ago.
Agreed, but there's no hockey, right? Virginia didn't even have a team. I think when I left Virginia, this was 1997, they had just got a club team.
Have they made the jump to D1 or are they still club?
Honestly,
I think they're still club.
I think they are because I haven't heard.
They haven't asked you for money yet?
Yeah, no. But because they would have to add a women's team, too.
Title IX.
Yeah, because of Title IX.
Or just subtract another sport.
Oh, exactly.
Could be crew or it could be male track, whatever it might be. Male swimming and diving, whatever it might be.
Who knows? But I haven't heard it. But it was club.
Yeah.
This was in 1997.
Yeah, but I mean, listen, if they were in the Big Ten, they would have a hockey team.
Yes.
If they're in the Big 12, they might have. What ACC teams have hockey teams?
I would guess none of them.
Anybody in the ACC have a non-club hockey team?
Like Boston College.
Oh, that's right.
But they're not in the ACC in hockey, though.
That's right.
Yeah.
I still associate, in my old mind, Boston College with the Big East.
Yeah.
I guess I need to stop doing that.
Troy
Bell hasn't played there for a while.
It's funny. I forget all the time that BC's in the ACC. You don't think about it. It's non-traditional.
No, it's crazy.
It took me a long time to remember that Miami was in the ACC.
That was, well, and Miami was in the Big East before that.
Yep.
I mean, it was
same with Virginia Tech.
Transient Virginia Tech was in the Big East. Yeah. Ace Custis, I know Ack remembers it.
Ace
used to have this
tattoo of the ace.
The ace. I don't think he ever made the NBA. I think he made some money overseas. But, You know, listen, bottom line with Jeremy Roenick, he's one of five Americans with 500-plus goals. And I don't know if the NHL, the Hockey Hall of Fame, quite does it the way maybe some other Hall of Fames, like contributions to the game.
Agreed.
But his all-encompassing portfolio, as he gets a little deeper into his broadcasting career, Jeremy Roenick's eventually going to wind up in the Hall of Fame. But he shouldn't have to wait as long as he's waiting. I don't pretend to be a hockey guru, but you know a great player when you see one. And the other thing is, you know, he played in such unique markets. Played in Chicago for almost 10 years. He played in Phoenix when they were just launching hockey in the desert.
20 seasons, too.
Yeah.
20 years.
I know. Played for the Flyers, which is, you know, hockey royalty. He just played for the Kings as well for a year, you know, after Gretzky. You know, so there's just so many things on his resume that shouts awesomeness, and he's a great ambassador for the game.
Yeah, we're biased. There you go. We're biased, but we still believe.
Yeah, we are biased, but I mean, it's not like we're unrealistically biased where the guy's got 126 goals and we're pushing him in for the Hall of Fame.
You're right.
He got 500 and something.
Agreed.
I mean, Ack, you know hockey better than we do.
Yep.
Is he a Hall of Famer?
Yes.
Be honest.
Yes.
Yeah. That's all I need to hear.
No hesitation.
That's all I need to hear. Ack is a straight shooter, unless he goes to the updates, then he makes things up. All right, let's get the update from Ack. We've got inbounds, out of bounds after that. Here's Rich.
This is Tiki and Tierney on CBS Sports Radio.
All righty, we're going to get to inbounds, out of bounds here in a sec on Tiki. And Tierney, time now for Doing More, brought to you by the Home Depot, the next generation of home improvement. Everything you need to do Project Smarter, it's the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. And we take a look at a player who's doing a whole lot for his team and little three-point bombage going on at the contest
this
over the
my
weekend.
My boy, the three-point contest on Saturday night with 2015 three-point champ Steph Curry, the overwhelming favorite. However, straight out of Wahoo Wah, Nets guard and former Cavalier
at guard
Joe Harris took home the title, 26 points in the final round, including hitting every one of the Moneyball rack, 5 of 5. Curry only had to make... he missed one of them.
It got close. Curry came really out close. Actually hit 10 in a row at one point there.
It did.
That was cool. I like that theater. That was fun.
He missed one in the last rack, which cost him the title.
Hey,
bringing the title home, Joe Harris.
You can't stop Joe Harris. He's turned into a really good pro.
He really has.
No doubt about it. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Sirius XM 206. Coming up next hour, Antonio Brown, Odell Beckham Jr. Two different stories for a couple of the wideouts. We'll get to that. Also, 5:20 Eastern, do a little Big East hoops. Chris Mullin, St. John's, big win against Jay Wright's Villanova Wildcats last night in front of 20,000 at the Garden. Place was popping. So we got Mullin coming on in about 40 minutes or so. Did you see the last play of the All-Star game when Steph Curry threw down that reverse dunk?
No. I saw him hanging on the rim. I saw a photo, but I didn't see it.
He threw it. He bounced it, threw it to himself, caught it, did a 180, threw it down.
Really?
Yeah,
I didn't think he was athletic like that.
I was a little surprised, Steph. Showing the hops.
Maybe he's holding back.
Holding back. He's keeping those legs fresh.
He's better of launching it from 30.
No offense to your boy Joe, who deserved it and was awesome. I wanted to see Seth and Steph.
Yeah,
I wanted to see that.
Yeah, but Seth is just kind of an average shooter.
Seth. He's an average shooter. He's a terrific shooter. He might be an average player. He can't really do a whole lot else.
No.
He's not an average shooter. He's an elite shooter. Seth?
Then why didn't he beat Joe?
That's not always indicative. Come on, don't be Mr. Literal. You ready for inbounds, out of bounds?
I am.
Let's go.
Anything can happen in sports and often does. What's right? What's wrong? And who's just crazy? We decide. Inbounds and out of bounds now. With Tiki and Tierney.
All right, Tiki, the Alliance of American Football. Pretty good again. Second week of action. Nice. And we like what we saw again. Week one was pretty good. Week two may have been better in terms of actual football.
Agreed.
As the two teams won by three or four fewer points. And the high-flying Orlando Apollos, maybe the team to beat, scored 17 unanswered fourth-quarter points to beat San Antonio. You were out there for the initial broadcast, of course, with Spiro Dedas and Trent Green. So you saw that crowd, 37-29. Now, Apollo's quarterback, Garrett Gilbert, almost threw for 400 yards, couple of touchdowns to the win. Right now, he's got 620 yards and four touchdowns through 2 weeks. He's 27. He spent 5 years in the NFL, mostly on practice squads, but he was active as a backup for a few of the Carolina Panther games between 2017 and 2018. By the way, didn't he come in and throw one of the bombs for Cam Newton?
Yes, he did.
Because Cam's shoulder was jacked up? Thought so. All right, in or out, Gilbert will be on an NFL roster in 2019.
I'm going to say inbounds. I think it was actually Heineke who came in and threw
I think you're right. It wasn't Gilbert. Panthers. You're right. I think you're right.
But, yeah, I think he will. Look, being a quarterback in the NFL, BT, is all about having tape and showing that you can make plays in critical-type situations. And he did that, and he's done it for 2 weeks. Now, a lot of this is play design. And you got to give Steve Spurrier a ton of credit for this high-flying, run-and-shoot offense that they're running out there. But I think Garrett Gilbert has proven that he belongs at least a shot at the NFL as opposed to just being a camp arm as he's been up for a lot of his career so far.
Totally agree. Inbounds, no question for me. I didn't really have to think hard about this at all. I love the throws. There's now, listen, some guys are wide open, and that's part of what Tiki just said in terms of play design. But the football is being placed in the right spot. You know, and one of the challenges for somebody that doesn't come with a great draft status and, you know, doesn't have the contract that usually is commensurate with playing time, it's about getting seen, about being visible.
Exactly.
And showing where you might tighten up some weaknesses during the offseason. This is a chance. You get it on tape. You send it out there. Everybody's watching. Listen, if you haven't watched much of the AAF, of the Alliance League, I don't know what to tell you. But, I'm never going to sit here and say it's the NFL, but it's incredibly viable. The broadcasters are top-notch. We know every one of them.
Yep.
The talent's good. The venues, for the most part, are rocking. There's high visibility in terms of knowing the coach's name, so there's good coaching. Everything's good, and I think Gilbert's in some good hands right now. My answer is yes, no doubt. Now, to say he's going to start, I don't know, but he's going to be on a roster? Yes, he'll be on a roster easily.
Are you in or are you out?
All right, moving on. Now, Major League Baseball has discussed various rules changes. We know about this. And yesterday at the Grapefruit League Media Day, you didn't really even know that they had that, to be honest with you. And I love baseball. Is that new? What is that? Commissioner Rob Manfred said the league's going to test out a 20-second pitch clock just during spring training.
Samter just said it started in 2016, so that's
okay.
Why.
All right, I don't feel too bad. At least it wasn't like 2001. I mean, where have I been for 17 or 18 years if that's the case? However, Manfred's comments about payrolls got most of the juice here. He said, quote, "I reject the notion that payroll is a good measure for how much a team's trying to win or how successful that team's going to be," said Manfred. End quote. As we know, the top payroll team in Boston beat the third highest payroll, the Dodgers, in the World Series this year, although only four of the last eight champions were in the top five in payrolls. The Astros won a championship. They were in top five, et cetera. Yep. In or out? Manfred's comments about payroll spending is in or out.
I'm going to say out of bounds here, BT. There's so many teams that are not in the top five, but are so close to being in the top five. It's Astros are being one. The Giants are another. The Royals might be the lone example because they did it so organically. I mean, this was just, it took a long, drawn-out process building up their farm system and getting those guys ready, and they just kind of came together and felt like a team. They got close, and then they ultimately won one. Look, at the end of the day, teams do as best they can to build organically. And then when they get close, if they have the money to spend, like the Red Sox, like the Yankees, maybe even like the Giants to an extent, they're going to spend some money on a big-time free agent that some of these small markets teams can't do. They simply can't spend that much money. So I'm going to say out of bounds.
Okay, I'm going to disagree. I hear where you're going, and there's certainly a correlation. It's been proven out for the most part. You spend some money, you're going to give yourself a chance to win some more games. I get that. Because the reinforcements in the back of the bullpen, obviously having an extra starter or two if somebody gets hurt, hits the DL, and in baseball over 162, invariably somebody always goes down. They pull a intercostal muscle, which is all the rage in baseball, or the shoulder flares up, or the elbow's barking. And if you're a team with a lot of money, you can sign guy, you know, give him $8 million, you could be a swing starter. So there's obviously benefits for sure, but baseball's changing, man, and this is more about augmenting a roster with a sage voice, but really, that's kind of going away. Yeah. You know, signing the veterans, those 32-year-old guys who are going to usually command some money, no, now it's about the fifth outfielder or the fourth outfielder. Instead of being a 33-year-old vet, he's a kid that's got some upside, that's maybe making $600,000 a year, so listen, money's always important. I'm not going to tell you differently. Money always matters, but it doesn't matter in baseball the way it once did. My answer is inbounds.
Are you in or are you out?
All right, Teak, moving on. Now, on Friday, we spoke to Wooden Award candidate Admiral Schofield of Tennessee. Didn't play too well over the weekend against Kentucky, but he did explain what advantage they have over other blue bloods like SEC rival Kentucky.
We haven't had winning in our conversation. So, you know, the Dukes, the Kentucky, those guys, they had to start somewhere, but they've always had a tradition of winning, always had a tradition of championships. That's our main goal. And that's why, you know, people say it doesn't seem like we're satisfied because, I mean, how could you be more desperate than us and you're Kentucky? How could you be more desperate than us and you're Kansas when you've, you know, won multiple national championships, you've won the conference in consecutive years? How could you be more desperate than us?
Yeah, that was a really enjoyable conversation. I would encourage you to go check it out. TikiandTierney.com, YouTube. What a terrific young man. They lost the game, but just about 24 hours later, after our conversation with Admiral Schofield, the Vols got steamrolled by Kentucky by nearly 20, prompting UK fans to chant, you know, it was coming, overrated, and forcing John Calipari to shut the crowd down quick.
You know, I know how good Tennessee is, and that's why I told our fans, enough of that they're overrated. They're not overrated. They're probably underrated. People don't realize. When you have a team like that that's been together, that their assist-to-turnover ratio is off the charts. When they create shots for each other like they do, when they're that physical with an inside and an outside game, they're not winning shooting threes. They're winning playing basketball. And they're unbelievable defensively. And, you know, we got them today, but we got to go up to Knoxville. Do we have to go up to Knoxville?
Yeah, the party. All right. There you go. So Kentucky's won 11 of their last 12. They move up to number 4 in the polls. Tennessee, by the way, dropped down to number 5. So they go from 1 to 5. And, you know, we're obviously with a couple of freshmen and a sophomore as their top 3 scorers, Kentucky just gaining traction.
Yeah.
They're starting to gel here. In or out, the result of the game is more about Kentucky's young team improving than maybe Tennessee being overrated.
I'm going to say out of bounds. I'm not going to say Tennessee was overrated. So don't confuse my out of bounds response with agreeing with this, the way that this question is worded. But I do think that Tennessee, having not been challenged the way that Kentucky challenged them athletically and also, I think, emotionally, Tennessee and their coach mentioned this, they got, Rick Barnes got selfish, right? It was just each guy wanting to do it himself, like each guy wanting to bring them back and make something happen, be the catalyst. When what got them this far, number one ranking and 18 wins in a row up to that point, was playing unselfish basketball. So I think they ran into something that they hadn't experienced in a while, and it caught up with them. But I do think Kentucky's getting better, but I think this was more about Tennessee, you know, just not knowing how to handle that situation.
Okay. I think Tennessee's really good. I think Tennessee's got a chance to go to the Final Four, and when you get there, flip a coin, anybody can win for
all
the most
matchups.
Part. Yeah, but I think this is more about Kentucky's young team improving. You got to remember, we kind of wrote them off. They played Duke early November. They lost by like 50 points. They got absolutely obliterated.
Who was their other?
And that was Central. They lost by Seton Hall in overtime. That was a weird game.
That's the one I'm thinking.
That was in New Jersey, by the way. That was, so you know, and then they lost
to Alabama
by 2 points, you know, and LSU by a couple points. So, really, they have 4 losses. When you play on November 6th against Coach K and, you know, 3 guys who are going to be first-round picks, probably the first 5 picks in the draft, you can kind of excuse them being a little overwhelmed. Kentucky's really good. It just took us a little longer this year to notice. They're fine.
Are you in or are you out?
All right, last one here over the weekend. J.B. Holmes made a big comeback, a little golf in the final 16 holes, overcoming a 4-stroke deficit to beat Justin Thomas is good.
Yeah.
He is good.
He just went cold.
I know, but boy, he's good.
It was a marathon.
Long weekend, weird weekend of golf, a lot of interruptions and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So Justin Thomas.
Holes.
They were playing this third round on Sunday. I mean, it was just crazy. So basically, Justin Thomas lost by a stroke at the Genesis Open. Tiger Woods was around as well. Tiger finished 15, 8 back. But a lot of announcers and fans complain about Holmes' slow pace. They don't like it. The final 9 holes took about 3 hours to go, which is obvious. That's like a local muni.
Yeah.
You get to the 10th hole, and there's 4 carts racked up. Like, we're going to be here all day, and my wife's going to be not happy. The average NFL game is 3 hours and 12 minutes, while NBA games are typically under 2.5 hours. So, in or out, the PGA Tour should institute time limits to help speed up the sport.
Inbounds, BT. Inbounds. You can't be egregious. Remember, we've had this issue with
Sergio the Waggles.
Garcia with the Waggles.
2002 at Bethpage?
It got frustrating.
Oh, they were all over him.
It just made him not want to. I like Sergio. It made you not want to root for him.
He got over it a little bit.
He did.
He was a Waggle machine.
I'm going to say inbounds. You don't make it so punitive that these guys got to rush, but you do got to move this along. It's hard to watch this on television.
Okay. I can understand why you'd say that. I'm going to say out of bounds, though, here, because I think it would be an overreaction due to the unique circumstances that, you know, infiltrated this round of golf and this weekend of golf. I mean, there were constant stoppages. The weather was horrific. Guys were on the range. You know, I watched Tiger and Justin Thomas and Adam Scott, who's, by the way, is playing well so far this year. He's learned how to putt again. He's good to go. He's putting with the stick in, I noticed. But their post-round conversations on CBS over the weekend, they were getting up at 2:30 in the morning. Like, they told us what they, you know, to be on the range at like 5:30 when it was dark. So it was really weird just because of the stoppages. And to react to that would be unwise. Let's give it a little more time. And if this happens again, then we just have to hope J.B. Holmes doesn't win. So we'll have to watch J.B. Holmes.
Exactly.
No disrespect to J.B. Holmes. I don't really enjoy watching J.B. Holmes play that much golf. Anyways, doesn't really move the needle for me.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.